This is the Podium Finish Live from Austin, Texas, and various points across the country. Here's your host, Rob Tiansen.
And a good day to everyone out there listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever podcast platform you listen to. I'm your host, Rob Tiansen, joined as always by my good friend and co-host, Nathan Solomon. We're from St. Bonaventure University, and we're also motorsports fans and journalists who just love to talk about racing. So you're in the right podcast to hear all about the latest happenings in NASCAR and other motorsports series. We're so glad that you can join us for episode 25, another milestone episode for us with the new rebooted TPF podcast that, as you mentioned, we mentioned on the first episode, we've come back from a hiatus, about a five-year hiatus, if you will. So we're just so glad to be back in action, getting things done. And obviously, it's a big different game nowadays in the motorsports journalism scene with a lot of younger folks out there. And it's just appropriate because we are going to be talking about young guns in NASCAR. In terms of that, I mean, the hot seat interview that you folks at home or in school, wherever you listen to us, we've got two hot seat interviews to air today. So super excited about that. And in fact, I'll tell you who they are, of course. Justin Haley and Noah Gregson will be joining us today. So we hope that you'll stay tuned and listen to their thoughts about their seasons to date, as well as their efforts with their new teams, getting up to speed in 2022 and much, much more. I know that at least with Noah Gregson, you can expect a lot of entertaining thoughts from him. And with Justin Haley, of course, always so thoughtful. And of course, it's a race day interview. So you'll see what we're talking about when we get to the hot seat. And of course, when I say Young Guns episode, it's exciting because of course, I am joined alongside my younger cohort, Nathan Solomon, and we've also got our fellow motorsports journalist, and he's a broadcaster with iRacing and much, much more. That, of course, is Marty Shikala, who we've always seen in the Zoom interviews, so it feels like a Zoom press conference, except this is a podcast, so I guess I'm the moderator today more so than anything else, but you know, let's hear from Nathan and Marty. I know as of recording, you know, Martinsville race weekend has come and gone. We're gonna definitely talk about that. I'm just going to leave it at that and just ask you, gentlemen, how are you both doing?
Well, first off, thank you for having me on, Rob. I think this is the third ever college station I've been on. Let's see, WGCC, WBSU. So reverse the two letters. Now we got WSBU for the radio folks at home. But yeah, RSN Trackside on Rock Sports Network. I'm the host of that every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Don't miss out on that. As well as the play-by-play voice of the newest professional soccer club in Rochester, Flower City Union. So that's what's keeping me busy these days. So.
And you've got a really great slate. Go ahead. Sorry.
And as always, I'm glad to be here as well. Talking about an interesting cup race from Saturday. So I'm sure we have a lot to talk about here today.
When you say interesting, Nathan, I'm sure you mean that very sincerely and wholeheartedly.
I have my thoughts.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing those thoughts from you. And of course, Marty, looking forward to having you on. And we're really thankful to have you on. And of course, I was on your show a while back and yep. It was a lot of fun. So, you know, I can advocate if you're only going to listen to motorsports shows online that are not, you know, from the series, besides ours, of course, check out Marty's great shows. Great, great entertaining content, of course. So definitely recommend it. And yes, the state of New York has taken over TPF Live.
Yes.
Just for today. But don't worry, Marty, you will be on the top step of the podium for this episode today. I do have to say that for a certain friend of ours.
Where's my champagne?
Here. It's right here.
Close enough.
Cool. This is a PG program, folks. We got to keep it real and a little bit dry here on for the college radio show side of things, and of course for those on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and whatever podcast platforms you listen to. Now, before we begin our first segment on the podcast, of course, if you're looking for the latest diecast cars in terms of NASCAR collectibles from Lionel Racing or IndyCar, movie, TV show cars from Greenlight Collectibles, head on over to CircleBDiecast.com. And if you spend $20 or more on in-stock items or any pre-order items that will be shipping at the same time, you can take advantage of free shipping by using promo code TPF2022. That's promo code TPF2022 to get free shipping on all in-stock items or pre-order items shipping at the same time of $20 or more. So head on over to CircleBDiecast.com. Tell Brent and the gang that Rob Tiongson, Marty, and Nathan, of course, sent you over. Yes, Marty, you're telling them that you're sending him over too. So
all right, check out Circle B. I mean, I do have a diecast wall full of 164s and a 124 too, if you count that.
So there you go. Head on over to CircleBDiecast.com because Rob, Nathan, and Marty told you to do so. So just do that. So, anyways, folks, now that you know how this podcast is like, let's get to it. It's podium perspectives time. All right, folks, so let's get real here. Martinsville, at least the cup side of things, starting off with that. Saturday night special, 400 laps. I'm going to set up a scenario before we get into the race. Now, last week, of course, Nathan and I, we were a little bit peeved that Martinsville spring race was only, you know, 400 laps instead of 500 laps. And we thought, man, they're jipping us. What the heck? Martinsville's the best race, at least in terms of short track action. Well, I mean, I'm going to state the facts, and then we're going to hear from Marty and then from Nathan. I mean, in terms of the race, we only had 5 lead changes among 4 drivers. Of course, the dominant drivers being Chase Elliott and William Byron. In fact, when I look at the rundown, of course, Chase Elliott led 185 laps, while William Byron led 212 of the 403 laps run on Saturday night. I'll give you the top 10 rundown, of course. So, of course, William Byron won for the second time this year, followed by Joey Logano, Austin Dillon, Ryan Blaney, Ross Chastain, Kurt and Kyle Busch, Eric Almirola, and the two Chases, Chase Briscoe and Chase Elliott. I mean, let me just state the facts, and then we'll hear from you two. And I just did. So, anyways, Marty, let's hear your thoughts, and then we'll hear from Nathan. I mean, what did you think of the race? That's all I'm going to say right now.
Well, I think the most eventful part of that race was the fact that the hot dog stand actually sold out of hot dogs. I think that's what happens when you have too many red flags in an entire weekend and a rain delay. So, well, people do in the infield, they'll go eat some hot dogs. But that wasn't the best Martinsville race. I will say, though, I am glad, though, that the spring race was reduced down to 400 laps, because I know we've seen a lot of chatter that people don't like over 3.5 hours to 4 hours of racing and stuff. And so Martinsville made it a 400 lap race. The time of the race was 2 hours and 40 minutes. And as someone that goes to Watkins Glen and not a lot, I'm so used to 2 hour races there, because that's what it's been like the last few years. So I'm glad that this race was reduced to 400 laps. This was definitely a bummer for how this race went down, because we all know Martinsville is an incredible, legendary short track that's put on phenomenal races in the last few years, including using a package that everyone likes, that was as well successful when we saw the clash at the Coliseum. I think it was Austin Dillon that said, if I recall correctly, the reason why there wasn't a lot of package was because, you know, it was a really cold night. You know, there was even snow and rain in the forecast, and the drag on the cars just made it a little bit tougher to pass. You know, if we had the slick and sunny Martinsville that we normally have in perhaps the fall time of the year during the playoffs, I think that's when you see a lot more passing than normal. So I think with what went down, I'm kind of not surprised by the passing we saw. However, though, we did see a lot of aggressiveness, drivers going for the bumpers. Joey Logano used it at the final lap. It was definitely a bummer to see the only real passing being done was on pit road for the race lead. You know, we did see, though, Joey Logano challenge Austin Dillon for second in that long run before we had our final yellow of the race. But it was a bummer of a race, though, I'll say the least, but it will definitely rebound for what comes up next week in the final string of the 10-Virginia streak, as I call it.
Yeah, I thought It was an interesting race, and I was definitely a little bit disappointed by it. I definitely expected a lot more, especially, you know, Saturday night race, you know, at one of NASCAR's best short tracks. I kind of expected, you know, a lot more, especially just because the last couple of years, the Martinsville races have really been very exciting, and just really any short track racing has been really exciting. And I think one of the goals of this next gen car was to make short track racing even better and just make more short tracks on the schedule. And now we've kind of had three short tracks. I mean, we had Richmond last week, Martinsville this week. If you want to count Phoenix as a short track, I mean, those three are probably the worst shows of the year, unfortunately. So I think at this point you have to start raising a little bit of concern about how this car is going to race on this next gen car is going to race on short tracks. I mean, I don't think you can hit the panic button yet, but I think you can start to have a little bit of a growing concern. I mean, Martinsville used to be the most exciting race on the schedule, and then all of a sudden we just have a sleeper. And to Marty's point, of course, I don't think the weather helped at all. I mean, it was, you know, 38, 36 degrees and sleet and clouds and just not good racing weather. So that the weather conditions didn't help the track at all. But I think that NASCAR has to look into making a couple of changes with this package. And I think one of the changes could be to bump up a little bit of horsepower. I think at this point they should go up to 750 horsepower on tracks under a mile and a half. So kind of have that split like they did with the old car with like 750 and 550, except now it's 670 and 750. I think a little bit more speed to the cars will make it for some better racing. And another thought that I had, I could be completely wrong with this. I wonder if the composite body may have changed anything there just because of like the way that these new cars are built. Like I think it was Logano that said that, you know, you really had to give you know, William Byron like a really hard bump to like move him out of the way or really just to move anyone out of the way. So just because I think the composite bodies they just flex differently, so I think it was harder to move people. But I think that's fine though. But I think if they just add a little bit more horsepower and I would like to see this race be a Sunday afternoon race again. I mean, I understand why they had it as a Saturday night race so they don't compete with the Masters tournament. But I'd prefer it being a Sunday afternoon race just because they can, you know, the cars can start sliding around a little bit more. It'll be warmer and sunnier. So, in hindsight though, it's probably a good thing that they hit this race, with a 400 lapper on FS1 on a Saturday night, but, in the future, more horsepower and a Sunday afternoon blues.
Yeah. So I was going to say putting on an FS1 on a Saturday night, probably a good idea, because if this was on the Mothership Box network, you know, certainly it would have killed the argument, and maybe it has hurt it a little bit, how folks want to see more short track racing in the Cup Series. And Jeff Gluck brought it up. I thought about that in our team discussion as well, off channel, where, you know, we want to see more of these short track races, kind of like what we saw in the 1990s when I was at least growing up and watching these races. And now you're not seeing a lot of the physicality and a lot of the elbows going out there. And, you know, like with to Logano's point, of course, I do agree with your point as well about the composite bodies playing a factor. And I also wonder about that rear diffuser too, because the irony about this whole thing is the rear diffuser, to my understanding, it was to allow more of, you know, closer racing and to lessen the impact of dirty air. Now, of course, you saw folks get a little bit closer to the leaders, but then once that happened, you know, the runs would stall out. It would be really difficult to make passes if you couldn't bump somebody out of the way because of these more durable, more strong composite bodies versus the steel bodies that we were accustomed to. You know, certainly I think that's another thing. And yeah, the cold weather probably didn't help matters at all, which I actually thought it was going to help them because of maximum grip, but maybe a little bit too much grip out there, to say the least. But, you know, the Cup races, you're going to have some stinkers once in a while. I tend to be somebody who likes to defend NASCAR amongst the mainstream journalists, but unfortunately, I cannot. I don't mean like criticize them as in it was a terrible or bad sport, but more like if I was a fan, I feel like I got gypped, and the only enjoyable part, if I did like hot dogs, was the hot dogs themselves, and that's it. I mean, food shouldn't be the only great thing that you enjoy at a race or a sporting event. So, oh boy, you know, I'm probably going to digress about this race throughout the rest of the short track season. And we'll just see what happens when they come back in the fall. Maybe NASCAR will up the horsepower count, maybe look into modifying that rear diffuser. I mean, aerodynamics should not be a factor when it comes to short track racing, especially at Martinsville. If that's the case, then Harry Gantz win in 1991 would never have happened. I know you and Marty are a little too young to remember that race, a little bit too young.
I remember
that. You do remember it?
I mean, I wasn't born in 1991, but I know that was the time that he was known as Mr. October.
Yeah, and then the fender was all missing because he got into a crash. But,
yep.
I mean, aerodynamics didn't matter that day, and he still won. I want to see ugly, beaten-up race cars win races. We shouldn't see these pristine-looking sedans looking like, oh, he got into me on the highway kind of look, instead of like, oh, we'll get into topic number two, actually. Because if we get into topic number one, we're going to just be missing out on the fun stuff. So why don't we move along and let's talk about number two in our podium perspective topics. And of course, post Martinsville, how could we not talk about this? I mean, yes, congratulations to Brandon Jones. Congratulations to AJ Allmendinger winning the Dash for Cash bonus, and Landon Castle for giving those NFT cryptocurrency folks something to talk about with his runner-up finish. But I don't care about those top three finishers. I don't mean personally, I just mean for this topic. Because my goodness, Ty Gibbs and Sam Mayer, I'm going to sound like an old guy. Those little whippersnappers got into a Donnybrook. Yes, Donnybrook. That's the word of today's show. And let's just say they were not at their best behavior. If it was Sunday, they were not on their best Sunday behavior. That's why it was a Friday Night Light race. But we're there from Nathan and then from Marty, because I mean, I'm sure you two have so much to talk about. So Nathan, I mean, the Xfinity race at least offered a little bit more, but let's talk about that fight, shall we? Because I know you reported them on that for TPF.
Yeah, so I think the Xfinity race, in a sense, is kind of the complete opposite of the cup race. We couldn't get a long run in that race for like more than like 30 laps, it felt like. I mean, it was like, what, 18 cautions or something? It was pretty absurd. Lots of wrecking, bumping, you know, but it was, I mean, it shows why the Xfinity series has the best package in racing. I mean, it was great racing. It was just a little too much when it came to like crashes and everything. But you know, last lap, Gibbs and Sam Mayer, they're, you know, first of all, Ty Gibbs gets passed by his teammate for the lead on the green and white checkered. But that was number one in all this to start his displeasure. And then he gets bumped out of the way by Sam Mayer trying to go three wide middle in turns three and four in the last lap with a $100,000 bonus on the line. Mayer finishes fifth. Gibbs finishes eighth, and neither of them win $100,000. So Ty Gibbs was obviously not very happy with Mayer or just the fact that he lost the race. So he goes up there and, you know, tells Sam Mayer how he feels. Next thing you know, they're fighting on pit road. And it was completely instigated by Ty Gibbs. And I'm a little concerned about Ty Gibbs, honestly, because when something happens to him on the track that he doesn't like, he's not doing a very good job of containing his emotions. Now, this kind of goes back to Richmond, and you know, he moves John Hunter Nemechek out of the way, and you know, John Hunter Nemechek, obviously he's upset about it, but he does a pretty good job of kind of keeping control of his emotions. But basically the same thing happens with Ty Gibbs, and there's a fight on pit road. So Gibbs needs to work on keeping his emotions in check. I know that him and Mayer have had beef before, but Gibbs can't start a conflict every time he gets moved or something happens that he doesn't like on the racetrack, because this is starting to get kind of out of hand. It feels like he's starting to make enemies every week out here, and this is something that we're talking about on a regular basis about him and all of his enemies. So we'll see if any suspensions or fines come from this, because again, this is completely, totally 100% instigated by Ty Gibbs. The clip went viral. I mean, I guess it's good in the sense that it goes viral and it gets some more eyes on the sport, if you will. But that's not what you want the sport to go viral for. I mean, you want it just to be, you know, an exciting finish that gets eyes on the sport. But Gibbs needs to work on getting his, controlling his emotions out on the racetrack, because we're starting to see him make a lot of enemies, and just his building frustration isn't good for the sport if he's going to keep getting in fights on pit road.
What time does this episode air on Wednesday nights again? I forgot.
11 a.m. Eastern time.
Yeah, okay. 11 a.m.
Okay. I'll probably just say the same thing I'm going to see on RSN track side. What Ty Gibbs did after the race on Friday night was atrocious, stupid, and made him and his grandfather, both of whom are Christian and perhaps the most religious in the sport, embarrassed. Now, I respect Ty Gibbs as a driver. This man's got a lot of talent. He has a bright future and will be a future champion in NASCAR. Could be the Xfinity Series, could be the Cup Series, whatever it is. He's got a bright future. Now, as Nathan said, he sent it into turn three on John Hunter Nemechek at Richmond last week, moved Ty for the win. Ty said the wins are hard to come by. He owes me one after that. And Nemechek says that wasn't racing, didn't even make sense. But with this temper, after the one that's been getting really aggressive, especially with the religion he has in the sport, you do it to other people and you got a taste of your own medicine and rage from that with your actions by hitting Sam Mayer. How many times after the checkers, Dale Earnhardt had that happen to him and he didn't get a fight in it. And we haven't gotten even to the worst part of it all, guys. Gibbs charges Mayer. They talk about a helmet's on. They're both mad. And like Nathan said, they've got history of hard racing back in ARCA in 2020. Mayer takes his helmet off, expects Gibbs to take his helmet off. Gibbs throws haymakers with his helmet on. That's the part that makes me mad the most with the helmet on. He's rocking a defenseless man with protection. Totally unacceptable. It makes Ty Gibbs look like a punk and a weenie. If you want to look like a tough guy, take the helmet off. The driver's rule in NASCAR is if you fight with helmets on or off. And we've seen this before. 2006 at Bristol, Jeff Gordon got spun by Matt Kenseth on the final lap in the spring race. He shoves Matt Kenseth with his helmet on. 2003 at Michigan, post-race, Jimmy Spencer with a helmet on punches Kurt Busch in his car and gives Kurt Busch a bloody nose. And this, Sam Mayer, you saw it, took some damage, a bruise on his left eye. Said it didn't hurt, but he looked concussed from my perspective. I don't care if it's a battle for the win, for second, or 35th. It's asinine and unacceptable. Even worse than this as well, NASCAR official was also injured, taken by stretcher. Of course, if Ty doesn't throw the haymakers, that's not happening. And even worse, Ty Gibbs was already called to the hauler once for not slowing down immediately under yellow. And guess what? 10-minute conversation or an hour conversation, whatever it was. Sam Mayer says that's what short track racing's all about with his best Denny Hamlin impression. 10 out of 10, by the way. Ty Gibbs gives his excuse and said he snapped and that he learned, but it doesn't give him the excuse for leaving his helmet on. Now, when it comes to the penalties, so when Gordon shoved Kenseth, Gordon got a $10,000 fine plus probation for 2 months. When Jimmy Spencer punched Kurt Busch, $25,000 fine and a week suspension probation for the rest of the year. I think we're already expecting penalties on Tuesday. I know we're recording on Sunday. With Gibbs, this is pretty much his first offense. I think it's going to be a $25,000 fine and probation for the end of the year. I'm not going to say a suspension or anything like that because it's Ty Gibbs' first offense. But this reminds me a lot of Joey Logano with the same age of Ty Gibbs at the age of 19 when he got spun by Harvick and both him and his father got into a scrum of pit road. But in the end of it, Ty Gibbs has lost a lot of respect before getting the cup. He's turned into the heel of the sport, has made Kyle Busch look like a good guy now, CC Kenny Wallace, and has pretty much embarrassed the Gibbs organization. And he even makes Chase Elliott fans actually look better than Ty Gibbs fans. If you can't handle getting moved out of the way, you don't deserve to be in the Cup Series right now.
And I also want to add, too, I think it's also not a great look on Joe Gibbs' part that, like, they cut to him after the race and, like, Brandon Jones, one of his cars won the race, and Ty Gibbs, who I know is his grandson, and had dominated the race, didn't. He just looked disappointed. Like, I don't think that's a great look either. I mean, especially when one of your cars wins the race, regardless of who it is. I mean, I know it's hard not to show favoritism, especially for your own grandson, but I don't think that's a good look on his part either.
Yeah, and if I'm Brandon Jones as well in that situation, personally, I would say I'm taking my Menards money somewhere else. If you don't like that I won because your grandson didn't win, all right, see ya.
Agreed. I mean, that's something that wasn't really talked about after the race that I thought was a little bit, you know, strange. I mean, you should be thrilled that you still won the race. I mean, your grandson didn't win, but your team car won. It wasn't like Landon Castle stole the race from the colleague boys and women and men in that team. It was a Gibbs car that won. So it was a bit, you know, just peculiar. The other thing I didn't like from this whole situation was Gibbs using his race car as a weapon and after the race. I mean, I get it. You know, I was once 19 years old and I don't think I controlled my temper as well as I do now. I'm almost twice that age today in 2022. But still, you know, like you said, Marty, that's a great point. If you're looking to get to the Cup Series, you've got to grow up, be a little mature, you know, take the defeats with grace and dignity. And not just because of his Christianity, but just being a good human being. I get we get mad when we get things taken away from us, but good for Lord. I mean, what he did was just ridiculous. And if they were going to fight it out, fairly, take the damn helmet off. I mean, like, you don't see in hockey folks being like, you know, dropping the gloves and then they keep, someone has their hockey stick still, you know, they drop the gloves, they get rid of the sticks and they duke it out on the rink. So, I mean, come on.
That's where a lot of people were comparing it to. And if you want to look at a guy that keeps his calm in situations like that, look no further than AJ Allmendinger. I know what he said post-race was, the guys are acting like stupid. And we all remember what he said after COTA. He said, it doesn't matter what my opinion is after getting moved for the win by Ross Chastain. And you just move on for it. We just got to accept it. And I even talked with AJ about it on it because of how John Hunter reacted after Richmond. I'm like, why should people be a lot more like you? He gave a great statement on it. I don't know where we could find that online. RSN Trackside Facebook page, obviously, for one. But be like AJ pretty much if you want to look in that situation. It's starting to get out of hand.
It is. I mean, we love the fact that back in 2010, I think it was Robin Pemberton who uttered the words, boys have at it. And great, we want to see personality. We want to see emotions. But we don't want to see it become like this circus WWE situation because, you know, whenever the word WWE is brought up to a NASCAR driver, they start to cringe in horror. And they don't want their sport, our sport, to be like that, to become all of a sudden, you know, a marketing campaign that the folks at NASCAR Media or whoever works on it can just keep airing ads of people beating each other up versus showing people, you know, beating and banging on the racetrack for the win and, you know, memorable moments that we can talk about in 10 years. We have to find a balance between that, and hopefully the NASCAR officials dictate and draw that line in the sand between saying, yep, guys, we like this, but we kind of want to keep the shenanigans to a minimum, just, you know, a little bit, because there's also kids watching the races too, that I'm sure that's a pretty hard conversation for a parent to have, to say, you know, son, or I'm sorry, dear, but you know, your favorite driver did this. And let me explain what's going on here. So that's pretty much the crux of that conversation. I'm sure on your show, Marty, and I'm sure here on TPF Live, we'll be talking about this again, because who knows? The two boys, of course, definitely went to NASCAR hauler, but they're kids, and they're going to definitely have another beef on the racetrack. Don't count that out. So
I know our buddy Casey Campbell has been a huge fan of Ty Gibbs versus Sam Mayer because he covers ARCA a lot more than NASCAR. I'm guessing he felt like a kid on Christmas Day when he saw them battling for the win.
I'm sure he did. I'm sure he's going to be talking about that on his preview show if he's not already writing that down as we speak. So I'm also going to be tuning into his thoughts. And yes, give a little shout out to Soup, of course. Campbell Soup, that's what I call him, the double C, and his great show on YouTube. So it's you young motorsports journalists, as I call y'all in a good way, the Brat Pack of NASCAR, doing the amazing things that y'all do. So just got to have almost a quarter of the gang, if you will, here on TPF Live, if I can count myself as one. But I am more like the uncle that's the manager of you guys. All right, folks, that was the first half of Podium Perspectives. We're now moving on to topic number 3 on here on our podcast. And good Lord, if you are a fan of Toyota Racing, you didn't really have a lot to talk about from Martinsville. I mean, the Xfinity side, of course, we just wrapped up that interesting conversation about Gibbs and Brandon Jones and Joe Gibbs Racing as a whole. But on the Cup side of things, they struggled mightily. And it's really kind of carried over in terms of what has been very concerning from the TRD Cup program, because when you look at that top 10 running order, you know, Kurt and Kyle Busch were the only ones carrying the Toyota banner in the top 10. And in terms of like their strength in numbers and just mixing it up with the leaders, there really wasn't a lot to talk about. I mean, they lacked a little bit of speed, cohesiveness. I mean, Martin Truex Jr., who seemed to be the favorite heading into this race, the best that he could muster was a 22nd place finish, and he was two laps off the pace, which is really, really concerning in terms of that number 19 team. So let me start off with Marty, and then we'll hear from Nathan about those Toyota struggles. Because, I mean, you know, that team, that whole OEM and their teams have to be almost hitting the panic button right now.
Yeah, but, I mean, when you think of it, though, this is kind of normal for Toyota when you think of it, you know. When we had the Gen 6, I mean, I know Kenseth won at Las Vegas in 2013, but it took him a while to get all the way up there. And yet we haven't seen really any winners in Toyota with the Gen 7 car, except for Denny Hamlin. Toyota's also, this has been normal. Once again, like I said, you know, they struggled in 2007 when they debuted in NASCAR, that's for sure, on the Cup Series side of things in the Xfinity Series. However, though, I would kind of be panicking right now at the moment if I were guys like specifically Christopher Bell and Denny, I mean, not Denny Hamlin because he's already in, Christopher Bell and probably Kyle Busch or Martin Truex Jr. And the reason why I say this, though, is we've already got seven different winners or something like that. Am I correct? Seven different winners? Yeah, seven different winners. And Christopher Bell started off the year with, I think, two last place finishes at Daytona and Auto Club. He was asked this in his media availability last week, if he was concerned about not making the playoffs. And Bell says he's starting to look at it because, you know, the parity once again that we've seen, a lot more than last year. Seven different winners in eight races this season. It could have been eight winners in eight races if Chase Elliott won the darn thing. And Christopher Bell could be in a situation where he would have to win his way into the playoffs. It likely wouldn't be able to point his way on in. I can see that concern a lot early on already. So we'll just have to see what happens as we enter this coming weekend. I think it's going to be, I would watch out for the Toyotas, though, because number one, we know Christopher Bell is good on dirt, multi-time Chili Bowl champion, and has been so good with a sprint car as well recently. And then Martin Truex Jr., who's been a big surprise to a lot of drivers on dirt, because he won the truck race on dirt in 2021. So I wouldn't be surprised if he was a big key player to help improve the Toyota game. We haven't looked down the 2311 side of things yet, but Denny Hamlin is getting really concerned. He said pre-race that he's talking with one pit crew saying, hey, great job, guys. Keep up the good work. And then he's talking with his own pit crew and saying, what the bleep, guys? Like, this has got to improve. And it's been tough. The only success that we've really seen out of the 2311 camp is Bubba Wallace getting a second place finish in the Daytona 500. I think Kurt Busch had a top 10 as well this season. I can't remember where it was. That's the only success that 2311 has had. I know Michael Jordan's not happy at that camp at the moment.
Yeah, kind of a weird day for Toyota. I kind of, you know, with how good that they were at Richmond last week, I kind of didn't really expect them to be so off today. And after Richmond, Chris Gabehart did say something post-race that he thought Denny would probably be a little bit off to start the race or start the weekend, and then they'd kind of be able to like zero in on it and kind of start getting it back. But they were never really able to get it back. I mean, Denny was so far off in the first stage, he got put a lap down. He was never able to get it back. Ended up three laps down. Martin Truex Jr. obviously struggled as well, and he's been one of the best at that track these last couple of years. I mean, he turned into such a great short track racer, especially at those two Richie Doo tracks. And he finished two laps down. Kyle Busch, not a bad day. And then, yeah, Christopher Bell, I think he ran up front, you know, for the better part of the first two stages and then kind of fell apart there in that last stage. I thought 2311 had some speed this weekend. Kurt Busch's car kind of came alive later in the race, finished sixth. Bubba Wallace, I forgot exactly where he finished. 16th, Bubba finished. And he had an early penalty that he really wasn't able to kind of bounce back from. Otherwise, I think Bubba probably could have been in the top 10 because he was pretty quick. But I think it was kind of interesting when they were showing the in-car camera with Kurt Busch. You know, this new car, people have to shift with it at Martinsville. And a lot of these people, they were kind of downshifting into the entrance of the corner when Kurt Busch was kind of downshifting in the middle of the corner. And that last stage, he made up a ton of ground there. So a better day for him to kind of compensate for a really bad Richmond weekend. But yeah, I mean, I'm concerned with Toyota overall, though. I mean, 23-11 really has not been great at all this year. Neither has Gibbs for the most part. You know, Martin Truex Jr. and Kyle Busch have kind of been reasonably consistent this year, but Denny Hamlin outside of the Richmond win and Christopher Bell have really struggled as well. So at this point, I'm starting to panic a little bit just with how much parity there is and knowing we already have 7 winners. And if there's going to be a year to have more, at least 16 winners or more than 16 winners, it's probably going to be this year because right now we're already on track for it. And there's a lot of really good drivers that still haven't won a race. I mean, you look at Chase Elliott, Kevin Harvick, you know, even Eric Almirola, and then the Penske guys, Blaney, Joey Logano, obviously Cindric's already in. So maybe even Brad Keselowski at RFK, he could be a guy that could win a super speedway race. And then of course the Gibbs guys, and you know, who else at this point? I mean, could be Daniel Suarez. It's time to finally win a race, or you know, maybe a Ty Dillon or an Eric Jones or someone. So a lot of parity. And if I were the Toyotas, I'd start panicking a little bit, just knowing that we need to get into victory lane sooner rather than later. And even in the case of Denny Hamlin, Denny might even need 2 wins to feel safe about his playoff chances.
Something crazy I just noticed as well, when you look at the standings for Toyota, Bubba Wallace is actually 3 points behind Denny Hamlin for what is 21st. In the point standings. Now, entering the weekend, the driver that is currently 31st in points, obviously, is Brad Keselowski, but the gap there is just over 50 points. Corey LaJoie is 30th, who comes in just about 46 or so behind Denny Hamlin at the moment. Imagine this. We're going to Talladega in a couple of weeks now, and this is something you may want to talk about next week. But anyone can win at Talladega, and there are threats there. When you look at who are between LaJoie and Keselowski and Denny Hamlin, obviously Bubba Wallace is one of them. Justin Haley, just because it's Kyle Gracie and they're so good on the super speedways. Michael McDowell and Todd Gilliland, the front row cars, always good at super speedways. Same with Ricky Stenhouse Jr. Harrison Burton was a front runner of the Daytona 500 until he had his flip. Ty Dillon, Cole Custer, I can't really comment on them too much because I haven't really seen a lot for them on super speedways. Just imagine, though, what could happen. We could be talking about a situation where after Talladega, Denny Hamlin could be outside of the top 30 in points. And if you make the playoffs, you have to make the top 30 in points. That was talked about when Kyle Busch broke his leg in 2015 and came back to win the championship. He wins a race, he just has to place in the top 30 in points.
That's quite true. I mean, you know, we're almost a quarter of the way into the season, and it is concerning that you look at Denny Hamlin with 157 points to Corey LaJoie with 99 points, he's hits 30th. I mean, you really should be thinking on the veteran camp, like, you don't have many more mulligans left. I mean, this is likely going to be a season where we just may reach or exceed the 16 different race winner number. Now, I know Kyle Larson, and I interviewed him at COTA, he wasn't too concerned about it. I mean, I don't think he should be too concerned about making it in, but if you're outside of that top 15, top 20, you know, certainly it is getting a bit interesting in terms of trying to build consistency, especially with the Toyota camp. I mean, we expect so much out of them because they're typically a really great OEM that's been able to shake things up. But I think the Ford camp has really started to wake up a little bit. They're starting to pick up on their performances. And to Nathan's point too, I mean, the fact that, you know, the Penske efforts of Joey Logano and Ryan Blaney have yet to win a regular season race, that's not going to stay that way forever. They're going to eventually find a way. They're going to find ways to win races when we get towards the summer months. And bet your bottom dollar too that, you know, the front row boys, Todd Gilliland and Michael McDowell, they could factor into things here as we get towards the later part of the season. And certainly when we talk about Talladega in 2 weeks' time, I mean, that's a race where anything and will likely happen in terms of results and surprises. I mean, if Austin Cindric could pull off that Daytona 500 win, who knows who's going to prevail at Talladega, because of also the two, and I'm going to repeat this a lot, that start finish line being past the traditional point between, you know, the middle part of the front stretch, almost towards the exit of pit road. So we're in for a great treat, boys and girls, and you best stay tuned to us on TPF Live, because we're going to have a lot of thoughts about that playoff cut field as we get towards the end of this first quarter into the second quarter of 2022. We're going to move into our final topic for Podium Perspectives. And yes, it is time to preview the Bristol Dirt Race. Now, last year, of course, in my opinion, and this is no slam to the tracks in NASCAR, but that was kind of a disorganized mess, but that's not totally on them. Now, if I recall, weather was a factor. So we didn't get to see a lot of the preliminaries that were going to lead up to what was going to be a great Bristol Dirt Race on the Cup side. Now, the truck race, of course, I mean, I from what I caught, it looked pretty good. For the Cup race, though, I mean, I don't know. But we know last year that Joey Logano won. We know Daniel Suarez delighted us all by being up towards the front of the field. And this is before Trackhouse, as you know, they found their mojo towards the end of last year into this year with Ross Chastain joining the camp. So let's hear from Nathan and then from Marty about the Bristol Dirt Race, because obviously NASCAR has put a lot more time and effort to try to assure us that it's going to be a better race. I mean, there's still the concerns about the windshield visibility, where some drivers are like, team, no windshield, and some are just like, I don't really care. And Kyle Busch, who just really wants this experiment to end. So Nathan and then Marty, what do y'all think about next Sunday's Easter Sunday night special?
Yeah, so I'm personally not a fan of Bristol Dirt. No, I know you've only been there once, and kind of to your point, yeah, it was a bit of a disorganized mess. But in my opinion, why take one of the best tracks on the NASCAR circuit, who, I mean, I think arguably puts on the best races every year and is arguably fans' most favorite track every year. I don't know why you cover it in dirt and put cup cars on it. Now, I think if NASCAR is going to do a dirt race, do it at a true dirt track. Now, I understand the difficulties of that just in terms of facilities being up to like a Cup Series level, you know, place. But I don't think I'll ever understand why we'll race dirt on Bristol. I hope it puts on a good show, and I hope, you know, I it's an important race because the TV slot it has and the promotions that they're doing for it, it's a big race and a lot of people are going to watch it. But I'd rather it just be Sunday night on the asphalt, because I think that could put an even better show on. And I know that they'd struggle to fill some of those seats at for the spring race before, but I don't think I'm ever going to be a fan of Bristol Dirt. I'd rather them do a NASCAR Cup Series dirt race on an actual dirt track like Eldora or Knoxville. But of course, the facilities would have to be, you know, Cup Series level facilities.
Now, Nathan, you know I love you and I respect you big time. And then, as you all know, I'm a big dirt guy. I cover dirt racing pretty much during the summers, especially the modifieds.
I knew my answer would probably be to the dismay of you.
You bet it was. However, though, there are many changes that Bristol has done to make this an incredible dirt race and put the first one in the dust. So, number one, we've reduced the banking, obviously, and it's progressive banking now at Bristol Motor Speedway. I can't recall how much it was, but it's obviously lower than what it was during last year. Number two, we are running this at night, and that's going to help with visibility, because we all remember last year, which was a dust bowl out there. And I remember I was at that race last season sitting on the back straightaway and was covered in dirt at the end of all of that. It was a dust bowl, led to single file restarts. And with it being at night, that's definitely going to help with visibility. Dirt races are normally run at night because of all that dust, so the drivers can see a whole lot better, because in the day, not only do you have the dust, you got that sunlight beating down on you, and it makes it really tough to see. Number three, and I'm not sure if any of you guys saw the videos of this, But NASCAR and Bristol Motor Speedway posted Stuart Friesen's test session of the next gen on dirt at Bristol last week. That car is sliding a lot better than it did with Gen 6 with all the modified adjustments. Doc Hudson once said, turn right to go left, and that car was sliding for sure. And I saw one post on this. I'm not sure it's true, but there was a test where Friesen removed the windshield off the car, and dirt cars are normally known for racing without windshields. Instead, they've got helmet tear-offs on their car. Could be a possibility where you see that. I don't think that's going to happen because it's NASCAR, but it could be a possibility. I'm not too sure, but I think we're expecting a lot. I think Steve Smith and everyone at Bristol Motor Speedway has learned a lot from what they've done last year. And I think we're going to have a great show under the lights on Easter night, which hasn't happened since I think the 80s. And it'll be very impressive to see what the Cup and Trucks does. As to if they could do it at a real dirt track, the only place that makes sense to me is obviously the Knoxville Raceway. I know Trucks obviously raced on there, but you've got room for Knoxville Raceway. Look how many seats are there during the Knoxville Nationals with the World of Outlaws sprint cars. They fill that up big time for World of Outlaws. They would fill that up in a heartbeat for the NASCAR Cup Series, that's for sure. You won't do it at outdoor because Tony Stewart pretty much laughed at NASCAR when he said, oh, you're going to take the cup cars on dirt? I'm taking the truck race out of Eldora.
Yes, that's a really good point that you brought up, Marty, about why we don't see NASCAR at Eldora and why we saw the SRX series, rather, being over there last year. You know, I'm kind of in between with both of your opinions in terms of the Bristol dirt race. Of course, I'm a traditionalist. It's well known that I've been a NASCAR fan since 1991, which makes me 25 years old. Okay, not really 25. But anyways, I try to be open-minded, of course, towards NASCAR's progressive vision for being different from what it was back in the 90s, and even to everyone's point about those good old days in the 2000s, 2010s. I just hope that, you know, we do see a good race, you know, certainly. Making it a night race should help out. You know, I did see the test clip on Twitter and social media as a start freeze and testing that current gen or next gen car. And it looked, like you said, a lot more more conducive to dirt track racing that I've seen in the past, at least when I watched the Chili Bowl and back in the TNN days when they used to show sprint car racing on Friday night programs. So I personally hope it's going to be good. I want to see the preliminaries and understand more of what goes on in dirt track racing for stock cars, because outside of this, I mean, the only major stock car series that does dirt track racing today still is ARCA. But unfortunately, a lot of those races are not on a major network. It's typically like on MAV TV or probably on Flow Racing, which of course requires a subscription. So that means it's kind of not viewed by, you know, Jill and Joe who catch it on the broadcast channels, and then they're going to say, great, dirt tracks and stock cars, huh? What's that all about? So I hope this is a better introduction to it, because if it does, then we're going to have a great old time seeing, it won't be just discussions of having asphalt short track races. Maybe we will see a proliferation of dirt track races or NASCAR getting a little bit more brave and realizing that they don't have to stick to this more modern era vision and just kind of go back to what worked in the past with a current vision. Let's actually take it, you know, talk about this topic one more time, more from a contender standpoint. So we'll start off with Marty and then Nathan. Name me two contenders and two dark horses for just the cup race.
Two contenders is easy. Number one, you got to look at the king of dirt right now. That's Kyle Larson. Incredible on sprint cars. It's a bummer we didn't see a lot from him in the cup race because he got involved in one of the early big wrecks that happened. So Kyle Larson is pretty much a gimme, number one. And then number two, of course, it has to be Christopher Bell. Like I mentioned earlier, multi-time Chili Bowl champion, knows how dirt racing works. So I'd watch out for him. As for two underdogs, it's a really tough one, to be honest. I don't want to say Joey Logano is considered an underdog considering he won this race last year. But if I had to go with two underdogs, here are my two choices. Number one, the guy that possibly had the bigger story than Joey Logano at the dirt race last year. And of course, that was Daniel Suarez. You know, Trackhouse is on a lot of hype right now. Ross Chastain coming off of that win at COTA. You know, Suarez almost won at Auto Club Speedway in the second race of the season. And he drove that place pretty darn well at Bristow. If I recall correctly, he may have actually led the most laps in that race. I don't know, but Daniel Suarez would be my number one. And then my number two, the guy that's pretty much been the best driver to not win this season, that's Ryan Blaney. You know, his dad, Dave, has success on the dirt tracks, Sharon Speedway. They grew up at that racetrack. And I'm pretty sure that Dave and Ryan are racing together at Sharon Speedway when SRX goes there this summer. And I mean, I know Ryan doesn't have a lot of dirt experience like Dave does. Ryan's more the asphalt guy that we saw in the 2010s. I'd watch out for Ryan Blaney. This was a guy as well that finished inside the top 10 with a beat up race car too.
Yeah. So my two contenders were, well, Larson and Christopher Bell. So I guess I'll go with two underdogs. Number one, Chase Briscoe. I don't think people talk enough about what he's kind of accomplished on dirt. You know, he's a great racer, grew up a dirt racer. Obviously already has the win this season. I'm sure he'll be a guy to look out for. And then someone that we already kind of touched on a little bit earlier, Martin Truex Jr. You know, he ran well and won that truck race in 2021 at Bristol Dirt. So I'm sure he'll be another guy to look out for on Sunday.
Those are great choices you guys made right there. I mean, it is safe, but you got to play with the house sometimes in terms of picks. As for me, to be really quick about this, the two top contenders, of course, I would have to agree with both of you in terms of Kyle Larson and Christopher Bell. I mean, they're top of mind, top of sight when it comes to the Bristol Dirt Race. But, you know, Daniel Suarez, Marty, I like that choice. I'm going to take it a little bit interesting here in terms of the dirt choice here. And no, I'm not trying to support Team Hendrick, but Chase Elliott. I'm gonna throw his name out there. I mean, he did some dirt races last year after the season ended, and you know, certainly seems to be taking an interest in it because you know, Hendrick Motorsports, before Kyle Larson joined the team, Rick Hendrick was not exactly receptive to his drivers taking part in what he would deem extracurricular motorsports, but he's opened the doors for his drivers to partake in different types of racing. You see William Byron doing so well in late models, and then Chase Elliott, of course, doing some sprint car races. You have to think that some of those experiences that he got late last year racing on the West Coast may have helped him a little bit. And he didn't do so bad last year. I think he got a top 10 in the Bristol Dirt race with a beat up car himself too. So I look for Elliott and Suarez to really be some of the underdog drivers, if you will, to be in that mix on Sunday night. Who knows, maybe we'll be right. Unfortunately, I can't offer Clint Boyer's money. I don't have that kind of budget. But if I did, I would give away money to you both if you both are correct. Let's just give away NFT and cryptocurrency because I can give you like 3,000 dinosaurs for doing a good job on that. So job well done, gentlemen. Really enjoyed doing this. Podium Perspectives with you both. I hope you girls and boys at home also did too. And if you want us to talk about specific topics, please tweet to us. I am at Rob T. Youngson. Of course, Nathan is NSolly02, and our main Twitter account, of course, is The Podium Finish. And of course, if you want to follow along with Marty on Twitter, he is, of course, Marty Chikala. So let us get on to our final topic, our final part of our show, and that is the hot seat. Now, TPF was on the road quite a bit in late March and earlier this month. Of course, that all started when Stephen Conley was at Atlanta and saw some of the wildest races we've seen yet at an intermediate racetrack. But in terms of interviews, I know that I did several interviews at COTA, and I know Nathan, he got his first on-track experiences with press stuff with TPF. So we're going to make this another double billing episode of In the Hot Seat because recently, Nathan Solomon, of course, our good managing editor and fellow St. Bonaventure student like me, he interviewed Justin Haley at Richmond while I got to catch up with Noah Gregson. Like I said at the top of the show, it was Noah Gregson. What do you expect? He's not going to be very, he actually was pretty calm and pretty tame, but he still has some interesting thoughts to offer. But in terms of your interview, Nathan, with Justin Haley, I'm kind of curious as to how that went for you.
Yeah, it went really well. You know, I did a bunch of interviews when I was at Richmond. Really, this was the only one, though, that I kind of did in the direction towards CPF Live. I did the others towards, you know, just like written features on our website. But it went really well. Obviously, I think drivers they're going to be a little bit more reserved on race day, which is, you know, when I did mine, I only did mine like, you know, an hour and a half before the command. So pretty close to the start of the race. But I enjoyed talking with Justin Haley. Obviously, we talked about some of his Xfinity Series stuff and his great super speedway racing and really his start in the Cup Series with Spire Motorsports and then being full-time now with College Racing. So definitely enjoy talking with him, and I hope all the listeners will enjoy hearing what he has to say.
Absolutely. We'll hear from him very shortly. And Marty, of course, wanted to get your thoughts on Noah Gregson. Of course, Noah, when I talked to him at COTA, just like Nathan, it was a few hours before his race. So, of course, like he's to Nathan's point, you know, with it being race day, drivers are a little bit more reserved. But, of course, Noah beats to a different drum. What's your take on Noah Gregson?
Gregson's incredible. Just perhaps on it, he's on the start to what could be his best year ever in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. No, he made the championship for last year, didn't win it, but this is good. That brought him a lot of momentum and he carried over to this series. You know, he was in contention to win at Martinsville, and then Sam Mayer did what Sam Mayer did, but he had a derpity dirt moment, that's for sure. But you look at Noah Gregson coming on in 42 points behind on AJ Allmendinger, has a race win, should have two wins by now, three stage wins. He is definitely going to be a threat this season, and always a great interview no matter what happens. I remember the last time we talked, he was at a go-kart track getting ready for Charlotte.
That had to be really amusing, and I'm sure at least when him being away from the racetrack, he's a lot more relaxed.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Noah is going to be a lot of fun for you folks at home to listen to. So let's just get to it, folks. Let's give them the TPF race car as Nathan and I both take you in the hot seat with Justin Haley and Noah Gregson. Enjoy, folks.
Justin, to start, just how has the beginning of this season been for you?
It's been good. I think we're running a little bit ahead of where we thought we would be. So just trying to learn the next-gen car and getting all of our ducks in a row for – you know, things like restarts and pit road and personnel on our team. You know, just trying to get everything working for a new Cup team. New two-car organization is tough. So, it's been good. We've set some good expectations, and I feel like we're working towards a good spot.
What's this transition from a full-time Xfinity driver to a full-time Cup Series driver been like for you?
It hasn't been bad just because last year I was doing double duty, right? So I was already doing the Cup races. I think for me, this year actually has been a little bit easier because I'm only running one series, but also it's been harder being in a competitive situation on the Cup side and trying to, you know, get good finishes out of each Cup race. So, it's been fun. I feel like I enjoy Sundays. I enjoy the grind of it and pushing every day to be a little bit better. And that extra spot in Cup is a lot harder to come by than it was in Xfinity.
Now, you spent three full-time seasons in the Xfinity Series here with College Racing. Just kind of talk about that and what you learned from that time.
No, it was a big step. I think the transition from trucks to Xfinity was probably the biggest that I've had in my life. So, it was good. The 3 years in Xfinity, just trying to build that organization. When I first came to College, it was a one-car organization. So, you know, just the progression of colleague and eventually turning into three Xfinity teams, now two Cup teams, five teams total, and trying to figure that all out. So, I'm really appreciative of Matt Colleague and Chris Rice and their belief in me through Lee Filter and just trying to, figure out what works for us.
What are some of the adjustments that you've kind of had to cope with as you make this transition from Xfinity to the Cup?
Just the car. I mean, it's the biggest thing. I've been fortunate enough to obviously move up with the same race team. So, having a lot of familiar faces here at College Racing and the Cup Series alongside me and put my window net up each week. So, just the biggest thing is just trying to figure out this car. It's what everyone's fighting with right now. So, slowly but surely, I feel like we've hit on some good stuff and just trying to figure out what works for us week in, week out.
And as college develops this Cup program, how important is it for you to have been here already, spent time with this organization, learned the personnel, and just learned kind of what college racing is?
Definitely made the step to Cup a lot easier. Like I said, knowing all the people and knowing how the organization works and what the expectations are. So, you know, throughout the past little bit, it's been good. It's been fun, and yeah, still hanging out with Matt College, so everything seems to be good.
And, you know, like you said earlier, you spent a lot of time doing double duty with Spire. When you were there, how did that opportunity kind of prepare you for where you are right now?
Yeah, just physically, mentally, just preparing myself for these longer races. Cup races are so long and hard on the body and take a lot out of you, so just trying to figure out what works for me hydration package wise and just trying to figure out how to race against these Cup guys. Obviously they're pretty good and they're professionals for a reason, so just trying to figure that out, what clicks for us, and feel like the opportunity to Spire has really helped me when I transitioned to Cup over here full time. So hats off to Tarot and Spire. It was good for me to get all those races underneath my belt and work with that team and figure out, you know, what it takes to be good on Sundays.
Now, early on, you've been through a lot of adversity this season. I know you're down a couple of crew members here today in Richmond, but you still pieced together some consistent finishes. So just kind of at this point, how well do you think you guys have been able to battle and kind of just stay level-headed through everything you've been through already this year?
Yeah, no, it's definitely been a hard season so far, and we're not too deep into it. So, yeah, no, it just shows the fight in our team, and obviously not having Trent on the box for the past few races, but still working closely with him back at the shop and figuring out what works for us, and then also you know, just trying to figure out what works for us in the simulator with this limited practice time. Takes that simulation time back home during the week, makes it a lot more serious. So yeah, it's been good. I feel like right now where we're at in points and the finishes we're putting up have been solid, and just trying to, you know, maintain that throughout the season is going to be the tough part.
Sure, and now, you know, you're already a Cup Series winner. You want to race at Daytona with Spire. That being said, does that let you kind of get more comfortable now with this full-time opportunity, or does that you put more pressure on yourself, knowing that you kind of have to live up to that again?
No, I'm pretty confident and comfortable where we're at right now. So it's not like we're going to, you know, with two brand-new cars and a new Cup team, just going to go out there and win every single race in the championship. So we're working positively towards, you know, what we expect to be at the end of the year. And yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm pretty comfortable, confident in our race team abilities and just trying to work towards our goals.
Now, that win for you came at Daytona, and all of your Xfinity wins came at Daytona. Now, how did you become such a good super speedway racer?
I have no idea. I guess woke up one day and was gifted with some good opportunities around me, gifted with great team members, great cars, great teammates. Just a lot of good opportunities really fell in place and allowed me to win a lot of speedway races. Hopefully we're not done winning speedway races. So it's been good to me. So hopefully we can keep that up. Just a lot of luck and a lot of good people behind me.
Now, that being said, since you are such a good super speedway racer, do you like the Atlantic configuration?
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was great. I feel like it was one of the best races for us. We went up and took the lead, and we were fast all day. So, no, I look forward to getting back there in the fall and racing there. I feel like it was, again, one of our fastest tracks of the year. So, just trying to maximize on what we got.
Now, what are your goals for 2022 and beyond?
We really don't have goals. I mean, our expectations right now are kind of just what we set on ourselves, but I don't think it's fair quite yet to put goals on what we can or can't accomplish. So, like I said, we're just focused on us and trying to be the best us that we can be, and we'll see where that lands.
My last question for you, what do you hope to build with college racing in the Cup Series?
Well, obviously, we want to build ourselves into a championship caliber team. I feel like we're in a good direction right now, but at the end of the day, we just show up every week and we want a trophy hunt for Matt Colleague and all of his sponsors. So that's the goal, week in and week out, is put a trophy on Matt Colleague's table and just keep fighting for that.
Well, Noah, thank you for taking time today for us at the Podium Finish and the Podium Finish Live podcast. You've been off to a really great, strong start this year with the win in Phoenix. So how confident do you feel about your chances to contend for this year's championship as you work with your new crew chief, Luke Lambert?
Yeah, I think just the confidence in the team right now is really high, and everyone's really motivated and working really, really hard. And it's greatly appreciated. And I think it shows when we get to the racetrack, everyone's hard work. You know, we've had a lot of speed this year and got off to a great start with Luke Lambert, like you mentioned. You know, just started working with him January. So to be able to get off to such a strong start, and I feel like our communication, you know, takes time to build that up, and takes time to really learn each other, crew chief and driver, you know, relationship to build that. But you know, everybody we just mesh so well together, and you know, we're really focused and really motivated and confident right now, and you know, we're excited to try and keep that going this year.
I mean, the results are showing that you guys are meshing really well, despite the fact we're only, what, 5 or 6 races in to the year. And I thought it was really funny how you guys either paid homage or being cheeky at Phoenix with Ryan Newman's radioactive moment that I'm surprised the telecast didn't catch on, but we did it online. How comfortable are you with Luke to build that rapport and also have a little bit of humor along the way?
Yeah, I think joking around is fun. It was actually Tyler Maughan on the radio playing Luke's part, and Luke didn't know about it. And then once we started, we were practicing, Tyler and I, Tyler's our spotter, and we got a pretty good laugh out of him. So, yeah, I mean, just keeping it light-hearted and, you know, and enjoying our time when we get to the racetrack is everything. And, you know, we put a lot of hard work in through the week, and, you know, when we get to the racetrack on the weekends, we feel prepared and we can go out there and have fun, and you know, things are going good right now. So yeah, just try and keep building on it with Luke and the rest of the team, and you know, get better and learn each and every week.
I think you guys are definitely getting there, to say the least. But I'm gonna throw a really big curveball at you. Now, it's no secret that you are very stylish, although you're not, you don't have those cool sunglasses you typically wear with you, but you know, you have the distinct sunglasses, you got the mullet that you grow during late in the year. Would you say you like to keep it fresh and interesting with your look?
Yeah, I kind of beat to my own drum, and probably do stuff that maybe most people wouldn't, but try and keep it unique. And yeah, like you mentioned, the sunglasses, wear different sunglasses, and then you start seeing other guys on pit road and stuff starting to wear those sunglasses. And yeah, I just like new cool stuff, and you know, if we could, I don't know, set a trend, it's cool. But yeah, I just kind of do whatever to make me stand out.
Have you thought about doing like a Beatles mop top or the Liam Gallagher shaggy hair look?
Maybe a bowl cut or something.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Maybe for playoff time. You've got a great personality, which is evident, but you go out of your way really to connect with fans, which I think is so cool, especially with those moments where we're able to be back at the track again since the start of the pandemic. How much energy do you draw off to these fans?
Oh, a ton. I mean, everything. You know, it was a lot different not having fans, and then having them come back, it makes you appreciate it maybe a little. I always appreciate the fans, but you know, you don't know what you got until it's gone, type deal. And you know, to have them back, it's great. It's a lot of fun, and definitely feed off their energy.
Yeah, for sure. And I would say one of the reasons why the fans also love being in this garage area or in the pits or in the grandstands is because the Xfinity Series, I feel like, has seen a huge uptick in recent years, whether it's the characters like you, the great drivers like yourself, or just the fact that competition is just so pure and great. But what do you think really is the main drawing point to this division that makes it not only one of the best to watch in America, but maybe even globally around the world?
Yeah, I think just the Xfinity cars themselves, the package that we got, makes for really exciting races. You know, they're a good length and everything, you know, distance wise and time wise, and you know, keeps people interested. And then at the same time, like you said, you got a lot of great race car drivers that we compete against on a weekly basis, and that helps put a good product out on the racetrack. And then you know, just the different personalities, you got guys like myself, and then you got you know, older guys that are 50, 60 years old, like Justin Allgaier, who have been in the series for a long time, and he's got a great fan base, and so you get a little mix of everything in here.
Well, I will not tell him the age part, but I hope you guys have a little bit of a war with warms and bags like you did with Josh Berry and Charlotte.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, what song from any music genre would you say best epitomizes who you are as a person, as a driver?
I don't know, probably something that's pretty raw and you know, fun, scrappy, and just doesn't, I don't know, maybe like Mo Bamba or something.
I'm going to have to check that out on Spotify after this interview just to see if you're just busting me or being serious.
No,
oh, cool. Cool. Now, I know you're still relatively young, but you've grown rather confident and a rather great team player over these last few years. How much would you say being a little bit older and wiser has helped you with your evolution as a driver?
I think it's helped me, you know, a bunch, you know, maturing. First off, as a person and growing and, you know, off-track stuff, and then it's helped me on track too, you know, as a driver, maturing that way too. And, you know, always looking to be better, you know, be better for our number nine team, be better for everyone at Junior Motorsports, being a good teammate, you know, just making the most of the opportunity and you know, just having fun along the way and really enjoying it. You never know when your last race is going to be. So just trying to make the most of each and every opportunity and, you know, be well prepared when we get to the racetrack. And, you know, it's taking time to really hone my craft and get comfortable with, you know, the whole process of that. But I feel like just the group of guys that we have around us and everybody at Junior Motorsports, but specifically this nine team, you know, we're just a kind of feel like a group of brothers. And, you know, we're able to go out there and have fun on the weekend. And we know we got each other's back when we get to the racetrack. And, you know, nothing else matters except for this team. And, you know, everybody stands behind everyone.
For sure. Got a couple more questions before I know you have to get back to debriefing with your team. Now, what's a bucket list item outside of motorsports that you've always wanted to accomplish and hope to have time for down the road?
I think racing a trophy truck would be pretty cool. You said outside of motorsports?
Yeah, outside of motorsports. That's cool, though.
Bucket list deal. Man, I don't know. I think, you know, I really enjoy mountain biking. And I've been to Whistler and mountain bike up there, but being able to, you know, go back up there and ride downhill mountain bikes or, yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
I would say if you wanted to try some biking, go out here in Austin and try out, like, Barton Creek and all that. The hills over there will challenge you a ton.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
For sure. Now, let's say you had to be me or Bob Pockers. Hopefully, you're me instead of Bob. And you had to describe Noah Gregson as a driver in three words. What three words would you choose and why?
Oh, I don't know. I don't really know if that's up for me to say. I think that's kind of for the judgment of other people. But, yeah, I don't know if I could really answer that just because, you know, I feel the way I do about myself, and you believe in yourself and you always want to bet on yourself. But yeah, I don't know if I can answer that question to the full potential just because, yeah, I don't know what other people think about me. And it's one of those deals where, you know, I'm happy with who I am, and I don't really care about other people's opinion. Just enjoy.
Just internalize everything, no outside noise.
Yeah.
Now, let's just say for my last question that you had control of Doc Brown's DeLorean and you got to go to any time, whether in the past or present or in the future. Where would you go and why? Hopefully you flash back to the future.
Yeah, I think I'd probably... I'd definitely go to the future. I don't know. Which I don't know if I'd want to know what the future would be like, because, you know, let's say 10 years down the road, you see kind of how your life is and what you're doing, and maybe you start to second guess yourself in the present on, am I doing everything right, and, you know, what's going to get me to this point. You know, you could be really successful or not, and I think you could just mind screw yourself, but at the same time, I think, I don't know. I'll probably go to the future, though.
At least you won't be 56 years old like me and Justin Allgaier, though.
Nah, you're young, Justin. He's old. He's got that. It's cool. He got this card in the mail. It was like the AARP deal. It's cool he got one of those. And so it's been good because he takes us out for lunch and stuff, and he gets all of us a discount, which is really cool. So.
Oh, man. And I'm older than Justin, believe it or not.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, you don't look old, though. Like, he's like, got super gray hair and stuff, so.
I wish I got this on video instead. Maybe next time. But no, do you have anything else you want to say to your fans before I wrap it up?
I appreciate all the support, and I know this team does as well. And you know, seeing people tweet me, and you know, just putting a smile on their face. I think that's what I really enjoy and feed off of. So just really appreciate everyone's support.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, before we close out this podcast, Marty, again, it was so awesome to have you. I always love having what I call the Brat Pack of NASCAR journalism here with us. And yes, for you folks at home, that's an 80s reference towards, you know, the Brat Pack of, you know, Robert Downey Jr., Rob Lowe, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not going to bore you all with all that. But Marty, Nathan and I are so glad to have you on. You know, tell the folks at home where we can catch your works again, just so we can get your stuff out there.
First off, pleasure to be on with you guys. Thank you so much for having me. RSN Trackside later tonight at 7 p.m. on Rock Sports Network. It's already a pre-recorded version we're doing. I've already been told by my co-host, Kelvin LaPierre, he's got a good rant coming up in his edition of What Grinds His Gears on Ty Gibbs. But now we're going to talk about that. He's got a big weekend coming up. He's at Bristol and then at Talladega. We'll preview all that. We may talk a little bit more of the local short track stuff because short track season in New York. The first weekend right now at our local short track, Land of Legends Raceway in Canandaigua, is at April 23rd. So don't miss out on that. I got a column on Race Pro Weekly, not weekly. I haven't done anything in a while on that, but I'll be getting back into that once racing season begins for me. And of course, new gigs on the road with the Rush Late Model Series. This weekend, we've got the Battle of the Bay. I get to hang out in some warm weather down in Maryland, Delaware, and Virginia. Delaware, though, first, then Maryland and Virginia. So don't miss out on that. Rush at Rush LM is the place to go for that. That's pretty much on the racing side of things. You can follow me on Twitter at Marty Cicala, and I'll just spell it Czekala because it's a long name. So that's where you can find all my stuff, and I hope you can follow along with my content in the future.
You betcha, my friend. And you are always welcome back in the proverbial hot seat for guest panelists. So Marty, we're always glad to have you on. I guess Nathan's probably got the easiest last name of us three because mine's no picnic either, with it being Tiongson, as in I'm not going to spell it and sing it like I did on episode number 15 with Jasmine Sharp. So we'll just leave it at that. But again, Marty, you're always welcome to be on here. I loved your insights, and let's have you back on real soon. All right.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, Nathan, of course, we always want to promote our content. So I know this week I've got Roman Grosjean coming up. And of course, long awaited and much, much anticipated interviews with Amber Mae Slagle and Logan Mazurka finally showing up. I've been so busy with life in general. So just glad to get those two and maybe much more for you folks at home. How about you, Nathan?
Yeah. So I'm working on turning around a couple more interviews that I did at Richmond. Anthony Alfredo, Ryan Vargas, all the features out on them this week. I'm excited to do those. So those are both great interviews, both super insightful guys to you know, to talk with, and they both have great journeys into NASCAR and into racing as well. So excited to share their stories on our platform. And then afterwards, you know, it's time to start already gearing up for another race weekend. I'll be at Dover here in a couple weeks, so you know, I'll be headed home first for a couple of days for our Easter break at school. But then once I come back, it's time to start prepping to hit the road again for some more in-person NASCAR racing. So super excited from that. Also, I'm sure I'll have more stuff coming up from whatever in midweek, you know, Zoom availabilities we have available to us. So just trucking along, and it's crazy how quickly this early season is kind of flying by.
Yeah, we do not get any breaks from the NASCAR side of things until at least mid-June. So still a long ways to go. And I forgot William Byron. I've got that hot seat interview with him. So good time as any to kind of get with him and get with a winner from the most recent Cup race. So we'll have him on as well. So folks, we're going to wrap up this show. But I want to thank you all very much for tuning into the Pony Finish Live. So for Nathan Solomon, Marty Cicala, and for, of course, Justin Haley and Noah Gregson, I'm your host, Rob Tiongson, signing off for yet another edition of the Podium Finish Live here on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Let's go get that checkered flag. Have a happy Easter weekend. And until next time, so long, everyone.